Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Femuliner. Last week, Missouri lawmakers approved a package of tax credits aimed at attracting a new Boeing facility to the state. Missouri is just one of a little over a dozen states competing to house the new production site of Boeing's 777X airliner. The company is considering its options following a labor dispute with a machinist union in Washington state. Missouri's bid offers the company up to $1.7 billion over 23 years, the exact amount depending on the number of jobs created. The state is also offering assistance with job training and a pledge from union groups to work around the clock without overtime to build the facility as quickly as possible. Governor Nixon is widely expected to sign the bill before Boeing's deadline tomorrow. The company is expected to announce a decision early next year. And today on Intersection, we'll take a closer look at Missouri's offer and talk about ways the state could best attract businesses in the future. Joining me in studio today, Chris Kelly is the Democratic State Representative for a part of Northeastern Boone County. Representative Kelly, thanks for joining the show.
Happy to be here.
Dan Meehan is the President and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry, the state's largest business association. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Brian Dobson is the Associate Dean of MU's Truman School of Public Affairs. Brian, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And for you and our audience, what do you think of Missouri's offer to Boeing? Is it too generous or not generous enough? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet at intersectkbia. So to get us started, and we'll dive into this further as the show goes on, but part of this whole story here with Boeing is that these corporations are able to make requests of states to bring all these different incentive packages. What kind of leveraging power do these corporations now have compared to the states? And Representative Kelly, in your experience, especially in recent years.
It's big, and it, especially for something like this Boeing deal or the Ford deal that Governor Nixon put together before. Because so many jobs come, it generates a lot of wealth in the society, in the state. There's a lot of ancillary supply line businesses in little communities around the state. And so there's a lot of economic and political interest in it.
Right. And so when it comes down to it, though, I mean, are corporations just more powerful than states right now?
Yeah, well, Brian? Well, Boeing is a very interesting case because it has become very experienced in extracting large amounts of money from state governments and elsewhere. If you just go back 10 years to 2001, when they wanted to relocate their headquarters from Seattle, they invited bids from Chicago and Dallas and Denver. And in the end, Chicago ended up paying $55 million to attract 500 jobs. Mm-hmm. They did it again with the Dreamliner. I think it was 2003, they got $3.2 billion out of the state of Washington to build the Dreamliner. And then in 2009, they pushed out some of the production to South Carolina. And South Carolina gave them $900 million. So we're now in a pattern that every time they have a new plane, a new piece of development, they put it out to bid. And this time it's 12 to 15 states. But the real act to beat, as far as Missouri is concerned, is Washington's own bid. And mm-hmm. they've put in, I'm trying to remember the amount that they've put in. It's about $3.4 billion that they're now offering to keep them in Washington. Mm-hmm. So no corporation worth its salt is going to go about a development project without first seeing what it can get from the state that it wishes to locate in.
Is Boeing just more adept at this than other companies, or other companies use the same moves?
Other companies do it all the time, but Boeing is one of the stars in this in terms of the sheer scale of money they've managed to pull from different states. Mm-hmm. And the CEO argues that basically this is a way of reducing the cost of business.
It's pretty much supply and demand. If you look at the demand for the state is getting those high-quality jobs, 2,000 to 8,000, depending on how this project is scaled. And if you look at the competition out there, Boeing's a unique case, not necessarily for the commercial side, but for the military aircraft side. But we're competing with other states, other countries. We're competing with Singapore, Ireland, Germany, you name it, for these opportunities. And like Brian said, there's the states aren't just or companies are getting fairly good at this. They know what's at stake, and they know they can leverage a deal to make it as competitive as possible to locate in a state or a country wherever they can go. Mm-hmm. The states will do this will win. We're one of 12 to 15 states, and Chris, I don't know. I've rarely do you see a company come to the legislature and ask for an incentive like the Ford bill or like others that we've seen, Wholesome Cement, for example. Boeing didn't show up. They simply put the RFP out. Their lobbyists weren't even in the hearing rooms. But it's that valuable that it coalesced St. Louis City, St. Louis County, the state of Missouri, business, labor, you name it, all together. And the magnitude and scale of that was something that needs to be reckoned with.
Sure. And just for our audience, we're going to mention RFP a lot throughout the day. It's a request for proposals put out. But I guess, Dan, maybe get your thoughts on the plan that did pass. Again, the governor hasn't quite signed it yet, but Missouri's incentive plan. What are your thoughts on that and its chances, I guess?
I think its chances in attracting Boeing.
Yeah.
I think we'll get a piece of the pie. I'm not sure how big it will be or small it will be compared to the pie. But if you look at what Boeing likes to do, they like to spread their facilities out into as many congressional districts that they can get in, because their main customer is the Department of Defense, and they need to have a big footprint to make sure they have sway to compete with other aerospace giants and military competition. So I think we get something out of this. St. Louis has a very skilled workforce with the legacy from McDonnell Douglas, then Boeing, with the fighter aircraft and the other aerospace industries that Boeing has there on the facility. And if you look at what's happening on the military side, which is what St. Louis is, the production of the F-18 is going to slow down, and someday it's going to end. And they've got that facility. More importantly, they got the talent there. And so I think St. Louis is in a very competitive position.
So, again, not necessarily saying we feel really confident about this particular big project, but also isn't there a chance to get this project could be sliced into pieces as well?
That's right? Exactly right. Yeah. It could be the IT and the design. It could be, we've heard a lot in the last couple of weeks about building the wing. The wing on these new aircraft are really where the new technology is, with the composite design and what have you. And a lot of that happens at a company called GKN right next door to Boeing in on the north side of the runway. So we could get a component of it. Or maybe we get the whole thing if we were lucky and good. But what we did last week, what the House and Senate did with the governor calling them into special session, was simply put us in the game. Now it's up to Boeing and the negotiations that go on right now. I will say that St. Louis City and St. Louis County are also putting together their own mm-hmm. packages. And from what I heard, the county is going to be a big one.
It's important to recognize that one of the things in the governor's proposal is that Boeing will only get subsidies tied to the people that actually go to work. So they don't get, if they bring a piece of the action, they get only the amount of money that is attachable to those employees who actually produce, are on the payroll in Missouri. So it's tailored very specifically to how many people go to work.
Yeah, that $1.7 billion number is tied to, what, 8,000-something jobs, I think, mm-hmm. right?
That's the full deal. It's $150 million a year, and that's at full scale. But like Chris is saying, it's a scalable project. Mm-hmm. So if we get 2,000, it's based on that number. But it's all performance-based. They have got to put up the capital investment and the investment in jobs and create the jobs before they get an incentive. Another thing that's important is these aren't new programs. These are existing programs at the Department of Economic Development that we're simply saying raise the cap to a level to accommodate what could be 8,000 new jobs in the whole project. But it's pegged at however many jobs we get.
Mm-hmm. Brian?
I was just going to say, I misspoke earlier. The offer that Washington has put together is $8.7 billion. They are determined to keep that plant in if they possibly can.
And there's a reason it's that big. What they have to offset is their gross receipts tax, which we don't have. So they pay a huge amount of tax on whatever's moved off the line. And that's Washington put themselves in that position, and that's why like Brian's saying, that offer from Washington has to compete against their own tax structure.
Mm-hmm. I think there's two interesting aspects to that. One is, did the governor and the legislature and the chamber and all the partners do a good job responding to this particular request for proposal? And the other track is, what about all this business in total philosophically? Is it a good idea or a bad idea or what? And those are, I think, very different conversations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll go there later, I think, too. Before we get there, why don't we talk a little bit more about this specific plan and maybe the Washington State plan. I mean, there's been a lot of talk. One thing that Boeing did put out in its RFP that it asked for was, or it would like to have, a seaport. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's tough for Missouri to offer. What's the chance, I guess, of getting over that hump and that problem with our plan, if you will? And also, I guess, there's been some, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, basically a subhead of one of their stories recently said, is Missouri getting played in this, basically just helping Boeing in their bargaining power with Washington State? I guess, what are your thoughts on how this might actually play out?
We don't get hurt.
Yeah.
If we compete and don't win, the cost of doing that, the ante, if you will, is pretty small compared to the possibility of the pot.
Okay.
And we tried to put the seaport in as an amendment, but it was ruled out of order.
No tide. However, we do have a pretty good river port, and a lot of us have been trying to expand the river port for a long. You can ship almost anything that they want down the Mississippi to New Orleans, people have been doing that since there's been a St. Louis.
Sure.
And we're lucky in Missouri. We're the cross section of the entire nation, of the continent, really. So we've got the second and third largest rail terminals. We've got the six most traveled interstates in the country. So it's a great place to be able to serve as a logistics hub, and Boeing can profit by that. Like Chris says, we have access to New Orleans via the river, and people are transporting commodities and heavy goods every day on it.
Right. What are some of the other requests, too, I guess, things that Boeing is going to be looking at here as they make this decision again probably next year?
Well, early next year. We expect it before mid-February. Workforce, assets on the ground, the tax policy, all the macro factors that companies use to make the decision.
Technical training at the
technical
community
training,
colleges.
The community college got together, and they were a great partner in putting together a united front with this. We build the best fighter aircraft in the world in St. Louis. There's a lot of expertise there that could move over and translate into the commercial side. So they look at the whole equation called economic development, and the job training, the economic development incentives, the tax increment financing proposal that they're looking at, all that comes into play.
Right. I guess one other quick thing, this is good for you, Chris, even though you weren't actually there last week because you were on pre-planned vacation, if that's correct.
But I was cyberly there. I was with my grandchildren in Disney World.
Right. That's a pretty good excuse. So were you surprised, though, to see how quickly this sailed through the legislature and see how things played out?
No, I wasn't. The great practical middle of the legislature followed the governor's excellent lead on this. The private sector was very engaged. The chamber, as Dan said, the labor unions, the business communities in St. Louis and Kansas City, and really around the state were very engaged in this and engaged right away. And one of the things that we found in Columbia that's important with economic development is, do you have a seamless team? And we had very, very little dissension on this. It's interesting that all the dissension came from the far left or the far right. And there was not much of that.
I want to take one moment to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking about Missouri's efforts to attract a new Boeing production facility to the state. On Friday, lawmakers approved a measure providing the company up to $1.7 billion over 23 years. Today on Intersection, we're talking about the incentive package and also discussing ways the state could attract businesses in the future. Joining me in studio for the conversation today, Chris Kelly is a Democratic state representative for part of northeastern Boone County. Dan Meehan is the president and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and Brian Dobson is the associate dean of MU's Truman School of Public Affairs. We'd also love to hear from you in our audience. Why do you think Boeing should come to Missouri? What can we offer that other states can't? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet at intersectkbia. We'd like to remind you that you can watch Intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2 at kbia.org. You can watch that video and join our online chat by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2 online at kbia.org. Okay, now, to get in closer to that territory you were taking us to earlier, Representative Kelly, Governor Nixon did take some criticism last week, pushing very hard for this Boeing proposal, but also he had vetoed House Bill 253 this year, which was broader tax cuts that many Republicans, especially that pushed in the legislature, were saying was going to help attract businesses to the state. So what do you think of, I guess, the governor's actions in this whole scenario?
Governor's leadership on this was widely praised. He involved people. He responded quickly and efficiently. This is the kind of thing that Jay Nixon does very, very well, and he did very well on this particular occasion, as he has on others. And nobody would accuse me of being a cheerleader for Nixon. But the fact of the matter is, his leadership on this was exemplary.
Dan, I wonder your thoughts on that too, and specifically about that tax cut bill as well that was brought to light by some Republican representatives. Mm-hmm. Leadership were saying, hey, where were you when we wanted to do this for everyone?
Right. But I'll echo Chris's sentiment. We had to act very quickly on this, and thank goodness the governor did. And he did involve the leadership from the Republican side in the House and Senate right away and kept them in the loop all along. This is how we like to see it run. Unfortunately, don't get your hopes up for next session. And if you're referencing House Bill 253, mm-hmm. We were supportive of that. And if you look at the tax structure that we face in the 8 contiguous states, 7 of them either have no income, 7 either have executed a tax cut of some kind. A couple of them don't even have an income tax. So that's a competitive factor. We thought House Bill 253 got at that. And helped, especially in Kansas City, where literally you go across the street and you pay less tax. You have a different regulatory climate. You have a different judicial system that's more favorable for the employer. This is very real competition that's out there, and we are losing currently, especially on the western side of the state. But to the overall question of do we need to go after each company individually, or will we have a macro approach to being business-friendly and competitive, I think we can do both. We always are advocating to make Missouri more competitive and those measures that we see working in other states. And when you have a special occasion like the Boeing instance or saving the Ford jobs in Clay Como, you've got to act with that particular target in mind. And thank goodness we did. This is the kind of thing that we absolutely should be competing for and winning.
What are your thoughts?
253 was a silly bill, and I use the term silly on purpose. It had hundreds of millions of dollars of errors in it, just plain errors that the sponsors didn't even know about. It was one of the most incompetent pieces of legislation that in my 17 years I've ever seen. I don't quarrel with any of Dan's goals, but competence is important, and no one could say that they were happy with the competence of the legislature on 253. It was very, very badly done.
What about, to his point, of doing targeting specific companies, but also are also trying to take a broader scope. Which one of those do you think works better, I guess, or do we know?
I don't think that it's an either or. Mm. I do think that one of the advantages, one of the best ways to recruit people to come into the state is have a workforce that can read or write. We have 100 school districts in rural Missouri that don't teach any foreign language. No intelligent young couple is going to move to a community with that kind of an elementary and secondary school. They're going to take their kids where they can educate their kids. We're cutting our own throat in rural economic development throat in rural Missouri by dumbing down our school system.
What else is – Brian, sorry, go ahead.
I just have a problem with the continuing mantra that somehow or other Missouri is a high-tech state. We tend to talk about various comparisons for taxes. Some analysis that we did a few months ago actually looked at the effective tax rate for businesses in both Missouri and all the surrounding states. And what came out of that is that Missouri is in the lower half. It's the one of the lowest tax states compared with Kansas, which continues to be in some of the higher tax rates. And I worry about the fact that if we keep cutting the tax rates based on dubious comparisons, then what we're going to be in a we're going to find ourselves in the position of not being able to fund those services which are essential and which business find necessary in terms of education and infrastructure and public safety. So if we want the quality of schools, we've got to have the resources to be able to do that. And the more we cut back on the potential tax revenues, the less competitive we're going to be on that front. So, I mean, I'm all for making sure that we are competitive in taxes, but let's make sure that we are comparing like with like. And I'm not convinced that much of the argument actually does that.
Yeah, what are some of the other, I guess...
That a climate where the legal system is favorable to employers. If that were the measure, then employers should go to like Tajikistan or Haiti, where if employees dissent, they just shoot them. There's a reasonable balance there.
Right. There are other considerations, I guess, what you're getting at, right?
But the problem with the legal climate, and it shouldn't be tilted one way or the other. It should be fair. And the problem we have is we see all sorts of claims made on the Missouri side of State Line Road that aren't even brought in Kansas. And it's because they can in Missouri. And they get employers in a position where they have to settle or risk millions of dollars in verdicts or costs in defending themselves. They don't even have these types of things in Kansas with the employment law issue that we dealt with.
Well, I guess one of the thing about this particular package of incentives and things that happened last week is there's been some early reporting that Governor Nixon and the housing commissioner are looking at the low-income housing tax credit and what's going to happen with that. I guess what are some of the other impacts we might see from what happened last week? I know.
It'll be interesting to see whether that is anything other than just a temporary delay for show. And it won't matter unless we change the law with regard to tax credits. And both the legislature and the governor continually overpromise on tax credit reform. People often say, well, tax credits cost $600 million. There's no way that you could reform them to get the $600 million. If you got $200, you'd be wildly successful, wildly successful.
Let's keep in mind this Boeing bill, for lack of a better title, mm-hmm. Is the first major economic development package that we've seen in about 5 years, save the Ford bill, and that was another special session. Mm-hmm. The legislature has been unable to get past this hurdle of, they call it tax credit reform, but it's also that some people have their own axe to grind on low-income housing or just the budget in general or historic tax credits, and it's been the reason given for not creating an incentive package that we could use more effectively for all employers to retain or to attract.
Everybody hates tax credits in general and loves all the specific tax credits is the problem.
It's right. Like the approval rating of Congress is at an all-time low, but you like your local guy.
Well, this will take, we're going to have to go to a break here in a few minutes, but I think we can go ahead and start this part of the conversation as well, is we've been talking about as we go, how we got to this point, I guess, where companies can, you know, make these kind of requests and states just have to step out and say, okay, here's what we can offer. Here's what we can give you to bring your jobs to our area that we so desperately want. So when did this trend of these states competing really begin? Well, maybe Brian, that would be good for you.
Well, I mean, the since the 1930s, when Mississippi was attempting to bring jobs from the Chicago area, these incentive packages have been put in place. But certainly since the 60s and 70s, there have been example after example of corporations seeking tax credits, tax benefits from every state. And part of the problem, I mean, it's a two-way thing. Most states and cities see themselves as being in competition with their neighbors. And so they want to be able, they think about economic development essentially attracting investment from somewhere else as opposed to trying to grow it from inside. Mm-hmm. So we'll steal next door neighbors' jobs rather than us. So we try and offer the best package. So the whole economic development infrastructure in the United States is very much geared to marketing and competition and what can we steal from our neighbors. And that's how economic developers are rewarded, by the number of projects and number of jobs that can be attracted. On the other side, all the finance directors in corporations across the country and across the world see, well, there's money to be gained here. And no finance director worth his salt is going to think about a development anywhere without seeing what they can extract in lower taxes, training grants, infrastructure, you name it. If we can get it and lower the cost of doing business, we will. So we've got two consenting partners to this, which means that it's almost impossible to stop. I think instinctively, I get very concerned about this continuing bidding wars that we have between states around every new project. But we now seem to be locked into this as a way of life. And as we come back to the Boeing deal, Missouri didn't have any choice but to enter into that arrangement, whether or not it's going to be successful. But if we are successful, then I would imagine that the $1.7 billion or whatever it is we're offering is only going to be a down payment. I think we're going to be under the gun to keep finding more and more money to keep that whole plant going. So we're in a game, and it's very hard for us to get out of it.
Sure.
And we just can't unilaterally disarm. Right. That is the game that we're in. You either get in the game or you lose. Right. It's that simple.
I bet if you took all the people in my job or Dan's job or Nixon's job and put them in a room and said, is this whole structure a good one, they'd vote against it. But the fact of the matter is nobody, as Dan said, is going to unilaterally disarm.
I guess there's no plan, right? There's no idea to make that happen. But like you said, I guess every other state would be the same situation most likely, right? If you got enough smart people in one room, they'd all agree.
If Tennessee said they were going to quit doing this tomorrow, I'm sure that our people would say, good. We'll get your stuff.
Mm-hmm. But nobody's taking that first step, right? Because then you're behind.
Everybody has to take the step at the same time,
right.
And they won't trust each other. Right. Take a step
on it, right?
Well, back in the 1990s, there was a suggestion that maybe there ought to be a federal law which prohibited this. As you can imagine, that didn't get very far.
Right. But we have to take a quick break. A reminder, audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about Missouri's efforts to draw a Boeing 777X production facility to the state. We're also discussing ways the state could attract business in the future. Joining me in studio for the conversation today, Chris Kelly is a Democratic state representative for part of northeastern Boone County. Dan Meehan is the president and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And Brian Dobson is the associate dean of MU's Truman School of Public Affairs. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and we'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuelner, and today we're talking about Missouri's efforts to attract Boeing's 777X production facility to the state. On Friday, lawmakers approved a measure providing the company up to $1.7 billion over 23 years. And today on Intersection, we're talking about Missouri's bid and also discussing ways the state could attract businesses in the future. Joining me in studio for the conversation today, Chris Kelly is a Democratic state representative for part of northeastern Boone County. Dan Meehan is the president and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry, the state's largest business association, and Brian Dobson is the associate dean of MU's Truman School of Public Affairs. And for you and our audience, should the state be in the business of offering tax credits to individual corporations? Would it be better to have a broad tax policy? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet intersectkbia. Had to kind of interrupt that conversation right before the break, so maybe just keep that going if we can. I guess, you know, some have actually called this the race to the bottom. I've seen that phrase used some places. Dan, what are your thoughts, I guess, on that phrase of this phenomenon of states competing against each other and trying to and you know, undermining some of their tax incentive, tax income to bring these businesses in?
I don't think it's a race to the bottom. It's reality, and like we were saying before the break, you either compete in this arena or you're not in it and you won't reap any of the rewards. So, you know, is it a race to the bottom if we do attract 2,000 to 8,000 jobs for Boeing and I've heard anywhere from over 2 to 3 jobs indirectly that would be generated by that. I don't know where that number would lie, but it certainly would help the supplier base of Boeing. We've got suppliers of Boeing in 110 out of 114 counties. There's almost 700 of them in our state. And to take it up to the 30,000 foot level for a second, you know, I work for the Missouri Chamber. I care about Missouri, but what would this mean for the region if we were to attract 8,000 good jobs? I mean, Illinois, Tennessee, the Midwest in general. I mean, that's something that we don't think about enough. And more these days, you're going to have to look at a regional approach to these things. Illinois is going to benefit by this, and they didn't have to lift a finger last week, or they don't have a special session. And we've definitely got a better business climate than Illinois. But this could be a huge boost for the Midwest.
Look what happens if they build a Boeing plant in terms of the need for electricity in the state of Missouri. And where is the place that the electricity is most likely to come from? It's most likely to come from mid-Missouri, and that's huge capital and employment commitment in mid-Missouri.
Sure. I mean, one other big question that's probably hard to answer, though, is how much do we know, and maybe it has to be anecdotal, Dan, but do we know how much these incentive packages factor into the decision for companies? Obviously, Boeing has tried to make it pretty clear they will, but you know, obviously there are other considerations. We talked about it earlier for every company into where they're going to locate. Do we know how often this really makes the difference, these incentive packages from state to state?
I think for each project, it has its own equation in that regard. But for Boeing, this is very important. Rarely do you see, at least I don't remember seeing this, an RFP, request for proposal, from a company to say, all right, we've got locations in all of these areas, 12 to 15 of them. Here's what we want to see. What can you do? You rarely see it defined so in such a detailed manner. It's usually more general, and it's up to the people in the legislature or the Department of Economic Development to craft the proposal that they think will work. But this was extremely specific. So I think the proposal, like we said earlier, this is simply to get in the bidding, get in the game. Mm. And thankfully, the legislature and the governor did that.
It's unusually large, too. With the smaller ones, smaller factors play a role. For example, I was active in the recruitment in the IBM team here locally. One of the things that was really important to IBM was our trail system in Columbia and Boone County. They, in fact, insisted that we expand the trail system to go right to the IBM facility. Quality of life is very important, and it's one of the reasons why Columbia and Mid-Missouri is able to compete so successfully.
And you've mentioned a few times, Dan, already, Kansas City is a very unique example, right? Because many of these companies actually can jump from one side to another and mm-hmm. maybe keep the same workers, right? It's just a different, it's just a slightly different commute, right?
Right? Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's, is that kind of highlighted the situation, I guess, or
it definitely did. If you look at the and the differing other factors, the school systems in Kansas City, Missouri versus Overland Park, or these other factors, quality of life, like Chris mentioned, so they all come into play, and it to each company. Chris cited IBM. I mean, that so they insisted on the trails. A company in Kansas City might move for the school system, or some move because of the economic development incentives. So there's a lot of different factors for different companies, and you just the challenge to a local economic development person on the ground at the tip of the spear is to try to match up with that, with the needs that are being asked for.
Sure, because think about it for a minute from the point of view of the corporation. Once the corporation makes a decision to locate in a given community, they know that their recruiters are going to have to go out and find those chemists or machinists or engineers or whatever and attract them to that business in that community. And they're measuring how much help the nature of that community is going to be in that process.
Right. Brian?
Just a couple of other things into the discussion. And I'm not saying that this applies in the Boeing thing, but there's been literally thousands of these sorts of development proposals, not necessarily at the scale of this one, around the country. And there are all sorts of attempts to define what a return on investment is, you know, what you get for that money. And time after time, there's been there are examples where the number of jobs that were promised don't materialize, the number of training places don't materialize, the investment in local supply chains doesn't materialize, and so you get the sense that numbers are created in terms of what you're going to get at the press release stage, and very little is done in terms of follow-up as to what really happens. And I think there's been some work that the auditor did on some of the tax credit programs in Missouri where a fraction of the jobs that were purported to have been created didn't actually materialize. So I think it's something that we need to pay attention to, is that before we get too carried away with all the promises, what actually materializes and what do we get for our money? And some of the models that are used have a whole set of dubious assumptions in them, which we just need to sort of take care that we don't believe that these are gospel. The other thing that we haven't mentioned so far is that this is $150 million a year. What else could we do with $150 million a year? The opportunity cost in that. And that really comes up in the discussion until we start to say, well, how are we going to fund the next thing? And right. we've already closed that deal. Now, again, Boeing is such a special case. It's such a large thing that it's difficult to gainsay. But there are many other projects where maybe it would have been a better deal to have done something else with the money rather than follow through with the tax incentives. So it just reinforces the point you were making before. Not every deal is the same. No. And every deal needs to be looked at on its
and
merits.
This is the biggest one that I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, Brian's right in a global sense.
That's
right. One of the things that Nixon, though, has been very good at is targeting the subsidy to the actual production of jobs. The $150 million subsidy doesn't occur except as a percentage of the total taxes that Boeing employees pay. So it's not like we're taking $150 million out of the current revenue of the state. We're taking a portion of the additional revenue that we would get from the employment taxes of the new employees.
Right. So this is a more pertinent point, and it's a job we maybe would have got anyway, right? Where the Boeing seems like it's going to be very contingent on whether we have the incentives.
Yes.
Right. Where this point.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
And it was also brought up in debate if they're scaling back the F-18 and that engineer goes from the F-18 line to the 777, does that count? But we've been doing this, I think, since 05 with quality jobs where the product has to be there, the job has to be there, the investment has to be there before the state comes in with any incentives. It's performance-based, like we've been saying.
And so, and we have that in this, obviously, we talked about it a little bit, but is there ever any hesitancy though to have those kind of, I've seen them called clawbacks in these bills, because again, you're trying to make it as appealing as possible to these companies.
You want to have a clawback if you can, because if as Brian was saying, if the jobs aren't created and you're already out the benefit, you want a way to redress that. So I don't think that was in anything we passed, but Boeing has to make good on what they say is going to happen before the state gets into it. It's scalable, so it will be anywhere from zero to $150 million a year, but somewhere along that spectrum.
There have been many examples where states have actually put money up front to get things done and then suddenly find that they've built a plant or they've built roads or they've made the site available, and then the factory doesn't produce what it says it's going to be.
We have a pretty good example.
We have one not too far away from
here. Right.
So we've got plenty of experience here, but very few states have been willing to enter into to actually implement the clawback agreements because they don't want to be seen to be unfriendly to business again. So you can't actually follow up on what you say you're going to do, because then that will be seen as being inappropriate. Fortunately, it doesn't sound in this case as though we're in that situation.
No money goes to Boeing that didn't come from a new job.
Okay.
And that's important. Clawbacks are most important in local economic development projects, because at least in Missouri, the local community is more likely to give money up front than is the state.
I guess too. So, is there to get back to the idea in general of these incentives to companies? I mean, there has to be a breaking point at some point, right, where you are going too far? How far are we away from that? Every state keeps looking at different tax incentives and things like that. At some point, you hit rock bottom. You run out of money to spend, or you run out of incentives because all of a sudden you can't fix I-70 anymore. How close are we to that rock bottom, or are we already past it?
I don't know what I don't know about Missouri, but I read about Washington's efforts to secure the Dreamliner project 10 years ago. They spent something like $3.2 billion then to secure that. What it meant is that they lost their biggest source of business tax revenue, and that they had to increase the gasoline tax in order to pay for the infrastructure improvements. That sounds very close to emptying out your closet, and so you've really then got to find other means of raising money to pay for the things that went with that development.
It's also changing the tax burden from the people who have ability to control the tax burden, i.e. the big corporation, to the ordinary citizen, who doesn't have as much ability to control the cost of gasoline, for instance.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, again, we don't know a whole lot about Missouri, but, I mean, obviously we're not running a big deficit every year or anything like
no
that.
Deficit. No deficit.
But at the same time, are we still having to make some of these, some of these concessions on some things we would rather not have to?
Well,
the words opportunity cost came up earlier.
Yeah.
And we have a glaring need for infrastructure investment. You mentioned I-70. Mm-hmm. That should have been rebuilt years ago, and it's high time that we do that. There's going to be a measure that the legislature considered last year, and I think it'll get to the voters this year, either via the legislature or initiative petition, that seeks a one penny increase in the sales tax to fund infrastructure and development around transportation. That's the kind of situation we find ourselves in. But like, We've all said, this incentive for Boeing is only paid out of that new revenue generated by the deal. Mm-hmm. That's the way that economic development projects should work in the future. And thankfully, that's the way this one was structured.
There's one exception to that, though, I think, and that's going to be the local governments and what they are being asked to do. And I haven't seen any of the details of the package.
No, that's a good point.
Somebody's got to supply the land, and somebody's got to supply the access to that land.
Right.
And I would imagine that's going to have to come up front, the same as the deal in Mobily. So somebody's going to be on the line with
that one. I haven't seen the St. Louis City or St. Louis
County. No, I haven't either.
Incentive package yet, but like I said earlier, I think they're stepping in to the same magnitude for them like the state did.
Yeah. But the state's going to be in a much stronger position than the locals mm-hmm. are, because they're going to have to put their money in first.
Mm-hmm. Take a moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking about Missouri's efforts to attract a new Boeing production facility to the state, and also discussing ways the state could attract businesses in the future. Joining me in studio for the conversation, Chris Kelly is a Democratic state representative for part of northeastern Boone County. Dan Meehan is the president and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and Brian Dobson is the associate dean of MU's Truman School of Public Affairs. And for you and our audience, should states compete with one another to attract large corporations? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet intersectkbia. One other thing we haven't talked about that's been part of this conversation in other states especially, and it'd be interesting to think about what it may mean in our state as well, is the impact all this may have on the state of organized labor. Again, in Washington state, the union voted to basically not accept some of the Boeing, some of the deal in with Boeing in Washington state. And so what is this? What could this possibly mean for the state of organized labor, some of these incentives, specifically this Boeing project as well? Any thoughts, maybe, Dan, from you on that?
Boeing isn't planning on doing anything different than how they do it now. So the machinist union would be the principal union that actually benefits by this. So it was with complete surprise last week when one morning the head of the machinist union had done a radio interview in Seattle and said that the people from that union in Washington are best equipped to build this, and basically said we shouldn't move it to St. Louis. And that alarmed everyone. He retracted that to a large extent. But I think labor stands to benefit by this, which is why you had the building trades come across with the concessions they made on working around the clock without overtime. Mm-hmm. It's why you had such a unified front from different labor organizations when we had the hearings and had the bill on the floor. So I don't think this really says anything about the state of organized labor, except mm-hmm. when they see something worth fighting for, they'll do it, just like we will, just like everybody on that team did.
Mm-hmm. In Washington, it looks slightly different in the sense that they were asked to enter into, I think, an 8-year agreement, but they had to accept a number of pension and benefit reductions. And I don't know the detail of that, but it was sufficient for them to say, no, we're not prepared to agree to that. And I think that was after the state had already put together its huge proposal of $8 billion. There is a quote that I saw online somewhere that the unions saw this as corporate extortion of communities and people who have long supported Boeing. And I think from their point of view, this is just the continuation of what's been going on for a decade or more, is every time there's a new project, they're put under the gun because they put the project out to bid across the country. And so they're forced into accepting or losing the deal. So somehow or other, unions have found themselves in a defensive position continually with the company. I don't know what it says more generally about the overall state of the union. It doesn't say much about what's going on here, but it does seem that very often the unions find themselves at the wrong end of the stick with these sorts of discussions. Mm-hmm. Whether they're thinking clearly about the issues or whether they feel it's time to put a line in the sand and try and stop some of this, some of the issues we've just been talking to, right. I don't know.
And again, Washington, they felt like they were at that place, but Dan, you're saying in Missouri now, these unions aren't probably making that kind of concession.
No, they see this as an opportunity. Sure.
Right, and I don't know what the negotiations are between Boeing and the machinist union in St. Louis. That's up to those two parties.
Right. Mm.
But these new jobs will, by and large, be labor jobs, organized labor jobs, I should say. Mm. So I think they stand to benefit at the end of the day.
One factor is the overall manufacturing pie growing or shrinking? If you've got an environment where the manufacturing pie is growing, you'll see much less internecine warfare between business and labor about labor issues because everybody's doing okay. But when the pie is shrinking, then people start looking at the margins, so workers' comp, unemployment comp, those kinds of issues, to much more specifically than they are if you've got a vibrant, growing economy. Because if everybody's doing okay, that's a much smaller piece of the economic puzzle.
Right. But there's still going to be a competition, though, most
sure,
likely,
and
for
there
those
ought to
new
be.
Businesses.
That's a healthy tension in society.
But again, at this point, we've already gotten down to this level where businesses know what they can already get and may just keep pushing it further, right? I mean, is that a concern, too?
Well, it's what they get paid for. That's what their shareholders have a right and they have an obligation to deliver. Right.
You know what? The system works. Say what you want about the economy, and it's not where we want it to be right now. But it's probably will always be one of the strongest aspects about this country. The system does work for all the fights that we get into over it and disagreements we may have. Chris said a healthy tension. I think that's right.
Right. I guess, I mean, again, to that effect of the cascading going, you know, getting larger and larger. I mean, is there a chance, even though disarmament seems unlikely, as we talked about earlier, is there any chance of scaling back or people hit or states hitting those limits and all of a sudden that it stops being as much of a race? I mean, it has to slow down.
I think you're going to see that. And, you can look at Kansas and say they got a more competitive tax environment. They also have a closing fund where at the end of the day, they'll come up to company X and say, locate here instead of wherever. And they'll literally hand over cash. How long can you sustain that is the question. I don't know if we've seen an example of that breaking the bank, but look at the realities that we see in Detroit or the state of Illinois. And I'm not saying it's because of their economic development incentives, but it's just a case of running out of money. And you have to balance that when you're making these decisions about what investments to make as a state government.
And there are macroeconomic changes. At 30 years ago, Moberly was a vibrant railroad town. Fact of the world is that the economy changed and there's no more need for roundhouses and locomotive engineers in Moberly as there once was. And same thing with the automobile industry, and the economy changes. There's no blockbuster jobs anymore because we all got Netflix.
Right. And if you look at some of the things that you see in productivity and how that's always improving, and it's doing away with a number of jobs as it increases, as productivity rises, the number of human beings you need working on an assembly line probably goes down. So where do we do to make that right, to create those new job opportunities? And overall, you got to grow the pie. But it's a little alarming when you see some studies that suggest that our GDP is going to grow for the next 20 years by 2% or less. You're not hitting where you need to hit on that. Right. And that's
due to one of the reasons people like things like Boeing, because somebody is producing actual wealth. Right. They're making something. They're manufacturing. And we see that leaving America. And that's why the aluminum company in Missouri is so important, and the other things where we actually make stuff is real important.
We only have a few minutes left in the show, about five, and I wanted to leave more time for this than we did. But since we have you here, Representative Kelly and Dan and Brian, we talk a little bit about what we can expect for this coming session. It's going to be starting next month. Representative Kelly, what are you going to be working on right off the bat?
Far and away, the most important thing facing the legislature next year is whether we expand medical services to cover the working poor. It's something that the chamber's been on all year. It's much, much bigger, by the way, than Boeing in terms of money for the state of Missouri. It will produce billions of dollars, and more people will be covered, and it will be good in every community in the state of Missouri.
Right.
The Medicaid expansion is far and away the biggest issue.
Right. The governor pushed for that last session, and it didn't pan out.
That's right.
I rarely have seen the number one priority of a governor get zero attention from the legislature in general. Now, some wanted it, like Chris, but the Republican leadership in the House and Senate didn't want to touch it. I think that's changing a little bit. Is it changing enough to have an impact? I don't know yet. But we're looking at saying we've paid all this money into the federal government. Let's get our share back to provide for the health care that we need to do in the state of Missouri. We're coming out with a statement today that we're going to lose up to $2.2 billion in federal funds by failing to expand Medicaid, a study done by the New York University. And that's a third party that doesn't have a vested interest in the, in this, but they looked at the states that are not going to expand, and they're losing a ton of investment.
Republican leadership was not in for this last session. Do we think they'll play ball this year?
I hope so. And I hope the Republicans who represent portions of Boone County will be. This, the failure to expand costs Columbia, Missouri $30 million.
Do you think something's changed that'll make them play ball this time?
I hope that the hospitals and the business community, like Dan, like the Chamber's doing, are talking turkey to people.
You try. But this is a tough one. And what we haven't said the P word yet, but it's an election year, and the politics of this, we saw it in special session. You have the Speaker of the House running for Attorney General. We have Senator Schaefer running for Attorney General. You have Senator Schmidt potentially running for Attorney General. So everybody's watching what the other are doing, and it's always done with the backdrop of politics, session as that is. But this year in particular, I think it's going to – you never know what's going to happen, but I don't hold out too much hope for a lot of activity this year.
Mm-hmm. What are the other – Brian, go
ahead. I just wanted to comment. It would be so interesting if the governor was to be so engaged as he has been in relation to the Boeing deal, and to really make not only verbally his priority, but actually get down and work with the legislature and get the response from the legislature to move this forward, saying, just as you did, this is $2.2 billion worth of investment, and it's X number of jobs and all the rest of it. If we could frame it in those ways, maybe something will happen. But
And the reality is it's a sixth of our economy.
Yeah.
We're all getting older, and the demographics argue for much more investment in healthcare in general, and this is one way to do it.
Right. About a minute left. Representative Kelly, what are the other big issues? That's your big one, but what are the
other ones? Well, for me, the one that Dan referred to before, infrastructure, is very, very important. The Fulton Hospital, the engineering school here in Columbia, the medical school in Kansas City. We've got a number of things we've got to get done.
Do you think the legislature will work together better this time around?
It's the sixth year I've been pushing this. Passed it twice in the House and never got it moving in the Senate.
Right, right. Dan, I mean, same thoughts on those, I guess.
Infrastructure is extremely important. Also, unemployment insurance. We're hemorrhaging money out of that fund that should be given out for the right reasons, and that's if you're unemployed due to no fault of your own, it tides you over until you get that next job, not for some of the crazy claims that we're seeing. We're going to be pushing hard on that infrastructure thing. And I'll say one more thing. Chris is an example. He's going to be another casualty of what we call term limits in the state of Missouri. We shouldn't have them. And they don't let the city of Columbia elect him again if they want to.
That's a whole other show, but we're going to have to stop this one here. So that's it for today's Intersection. Thanks to our guest, Democratic State Representative Chris Kelly, Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry President Dan Meehan, and Brian Dobson, who's the Associate Dean of MU's Truman School of Public Affairs. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection's a broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Intersection's produced by Raymond Tungekar, Janet Saidi, and Ruben Stern. Travis McMillan's our technical director with production assistance from Sifon Oyong, Casey Morrell, and Andrew Yost. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. And I'm Ryan Famuliner. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week.